As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Better up! Welcome to No Bunts, the podcast for the casual baseball fan here on The Athletic Baseball Show. I'm Tass Mellis. Excuse me for my raspiness today. With me in studio making the magic happen, as always, it's super producer JD.
What do we got? Allergies over there?
Nah, I just caught a little bug.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not allergies. I'd rather it be allergies, JD. Yeah, had a week of some stuff. Also had a minor procedure.
Okay.
TMI. But I'll share more with you later. I don't think I want to share it off the top of the show.
No, fair enough. It's a lot.
And with us from all the way on the other side of the world, from Taiwan, as always, it's Joel McMillan. What's up, Joel?
Tass, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. It may not sound like I'm doing good, but I'm doing really
good. You're looking good. That's what's important.
It was an elective procedure. I just want to say that I elected to do this procedure. And I'm not going to tell you what it is. But I'm very happy that I elected to do it. But just started me on a bad path where I picked up some congestion, and maybe I got it in the doctor's office. Maybe that's where I got it.
There's a lot
of sickness in the doctor's office.
You know? Well, now we're all going to guess what it is.
Guess.
Did you get your eyes done or something?
No, not going to tell you. But you are, Joel, you are going to tell us the stadium that's behind you, as you do every single week. You throw up a Zoom stadium behind you. Where are we?
Tass, you want to take a guess?
Yeah, because it says King County Stadium behind you.
Okay. Well, okay, technically, yeah, but it's the old kingdom, because we're talking about the Mariners today and their recent hot streak. So I was like, gonna show some respect to the Mariners and the old kingdom.
Respect, because we are Blue Jays fans. We did come in at the same time as the Seattle Mariners back in 1977, and they're playing in this thing, the kingdom. It's so strange. It's so strange looking at this thing. But yeah, I do remember that white roof. Sort of like the Minnesota roof. Ooh, a lot of balls lost in that roof, right, Joel? If I do recall, I mean, how could they not?
Those roofs. I mean, Killer and the Rays still playing something similar to this with all the catwalks. It's just a total nightmare. But I still got a soft spot for it in my heart. I mean, Ken Griffey Jr. was my favorite player growing up, so I watched a lot of Mariners highlights and games when I could. So, yeah, special place for me. But not the greatest stadiums. Safeco is obviously a much better field.
Oh, baby. Oh, baby. Yeah, it is. Special field. Can't wait to see it in person. Haven't seen it live. I would like to get out there. All right. Looking ahead, as Joel said, we're going to talk about the Mariners busting up the standings. But in general, we're going to look ahead to the final month of the season here. We got about 30 days left in the season, about 30 games for every single team. The playoff picture is taking shape. We'll also take a look at a fan in San Francisco that caught a ball with a fishing net. Is that kosher? I'm not sure. We'll discuss. And then a weird superstition or practice by a Yankees reliever when he gives up a run. Every time he gives up a run. A very, very strange practice. We'll get to that. He has an elective procedure every time he gives up a run. Anyways, we'll get to that. But first, we're looking ahead to the final month of the season. Here are the five biggest storylines going into the stretch run. All right. Yeah, I forgot we didn't have an animation there, JD. I don't know. I guess because we always have a top five things in baseball animation.
Yeah, I could roll that if you want me to, but it would take me a second.
No. That's my bad. All right. So first here, let me outline the playoff picture as we speak here. Let's start in the AL. The top team, the Baltimore Orioles. Technically in second, the Texas Rangers. The third division winner, the Minnesota Twins. The first wild card, the Rays. The second wild card, the Mariners. And the third wild card, the Astros. So those two teams in the AL West, they're tied with the Texas Rangers technically. In the NL, top team, the Braves. Dodgers are second. The third division winner, the Brewers in the Central. And then the wild cards are the Phillies, Cubs, and the Giants. So let's get to that AL West. It is wild, Joel. Three-way tie atop the division. Rangers, Mariners, and the Astros. It looked like the Rangers had this thing locked up. And then the Mariners just overtook them this past week. They came out of nowhere. The Rangers had led the West for 4.5 months from the beginning of April to late August. What the heck happened, Joel?
Laughs in New York Mets to that stat, Tass. Yeah, it's, you know, the Mariners have gotten hot at the right time. If you look at their numbers, basically from the beginning of the year, Tass, Seattle has been at the top of the league, whether it's offensive stats or like pitching stats. They've been in the top five. They've just, it seemed like, suffered from really, really, really bad luck and inconsistent play. But all of it has really clicked really since the beginning of this month. Their hot streak has coincided with Texas losing 8 games in a row. And, you know, Houston's kind of middling as well. So this doesn't really surprise me too much when you look at the underlying stats. I think Seattle is basically playing to, you know, their capabilities at this point. It's just, you know, it's coming later in the season. It'll be interesting to see if they can kind of maintain this momentum. You know, the law of averages says they're going to have to cool down at some point. But they've definitely, you know, like you said, they're in a virtual tie for first place. And if you look at their stats here offensively, Tass, they're sixth in team WAR, fifth in weighted runs created plus, 10th in runs scored, 10th in home runs, 9th in ISO. And their bullpen and starting pitching is in the top three in ERA, WAR, and fixed inning pitch. So they've got a very, very well-balanced team. I'm not really surprised by this. And kudos to them for, you know, rebounding. We talked about it a couple weeks ago from those tough losses with Baltimore and Kansas City. That really could have taken the wind out of their sails. But they've bounced back. They played excellent baseball. And I think they're going to be a playoff team come October.
Yeah, it sure looks like it. Because they have the pitchers to get there. Julio Rodriguez is a superstar in that lineup. His numbers getting close to what they were last year in his rookie year, where he got some MVP votes. He looks spectacular. And it's going to be a very fun final month of the season in the AL West, because the Mariners and Rangers play each other 7 more times. Including a 4-game set to wrap up the season. And the Astros play both those teams in a 3-game set, both of Texas and Seattle, respectively. Although they have struggled against the Mariners so far this season. They're 2-8, and maybe it's because they have a heavy right-handed hitting lineup, and the Mariners themselves got a lot of right-handed hurlers on the hill. Basically, everybody is a right-handed starter for them. So, looking at them up and down the roster, their bullpen is fantastic. It looked like when they traded Paul Sewald at the deadline, looked like they were giving up, but they're 21-6 since then. Yeah, they're on fire. They went through a stretch where they're 36-14 through a 50-game span. Yeah, they are absolutely on fire, but yeah, you look at their bullpen and just looking at how it's been composed, Joel, a lot of waiver guys, that don't have huge names at the back of the pen. It's Andrés Muñoz and Matt Brash closing it out, and then Justin Topa, Saucedo, Gabe Spire, Trent Thornton, Isaiah Campbell. So they've got all the pieces. And as you said, you think that they're going to get there. It looks like we could have three playoff teams from the West. Although I remember at the beginning of the season when the Astros were struggling, you said, well, it's the Astros. They're going to come back. They're going to do it. And the Stros are obviously playing phenomenal. We had Jose Altuve with his first cycle of his career, of his illustrious career. He's been on fire since returning from injury in late July, and they have been hot since Altuve came back in late July. Only the Braves have scored more runs. Now, they've got pitching problems, obviously. You know, Luis Garcia, Lance McCullers out this season, but rookie starters in Hunter Brown, and especially J.P. France, a guy that we highlighted earlier this season with his bifocals and his mustache coming up from the minor leagues to be a rook and to continue to do it every 5 days. We've got a great race in the AL West. We also, Joel, have a great race in the NL for the MVP because it looked like Ronald Acuna had this all locked up. But there are four guys who legitimately have a shot. Really, it's a couple at the top, but just because there's some nice symmetry here, I'm going to say the four guys because there's two Dodgers and two Braves, two guys from each of the two best teams in the NL. You also have a first baseman for each team, Freddie Freeman and Matt Olson, the guy who replaced him. And then an outfielder for each team in Ronald Acuna and Mookie Betts, although Mookie plays some second this year, and that has helped him, no doubt, because of the war and what he does defensively. But just to give you some of the information here, Ronald Acuna, he's going to be the first player in baseball history to have a 30-60 year because he's got 29 home runs and 61 stolen bases. That's a great story. But Mookie Betts has come on so strong. He's got seven more dingers than Ronald Acuna, way fewer stolen bases. But he's leading in war, the metric that probably depicts how great a player is. You know, look at whatever website you want. He's leading in war, and it highlights his defense and defensive versatility playing at second base. Now, the stats change all the time, but Betts is first in OPS, the only guy in the NL that's over 1,000. He's fifth in average, third in on-base percentage, first in slugging. But Acuna is close in a lot of those stats, and I like the first inning narrative with Ronald Acuna because he's having basically has a historic year in terms of hitting in the first inning. He's hitting nearly 400 in the first inning, best team in the NL, and he sets the table every single game, every single time he leads off. Obviously, Betts is in the leadoff spot as well, but the numbers are drastically different. These are going to be basically the best first inning ever from a hitter in so many different ways. So I've got Acuna still up top, but we've got, speaking of up top, the Braves and the Dodgers this week play four games. And I think after all the talk about the Atlanta Braves this year, to look at the standings and to see that they're only separated by four games atop the NL, you know, if we're doing the seeds and we're looking at who's going to have home field advantage throughout the postseason, only a four-game separator there. So that's kind of surprising. Anything to add on in terms of the MVP race, Joel?
Yeah, a couple things, Steph. So I was looking at the MVP odds, and of the four guys that you just mentioned, so this is the most recent betting line. Acuna is -160. Betts is a +110. Freeman is +1200, and Matt Olson is +10,000. I was kind of surprised at some of those odds. But yeah, Tess, you highlighted basically all the key points there. One thing, though, that I do want to mention is that Betts plays multiple positions and Acuna, Olson, and Freeman don't. And I think that needs to be acknowledged because you said the stats are so close between, you know, Betts and Acuna and even Freeman to an extent. And so, yes, a player's never had a 30 home run, 60 steal season. I think Acuna, the smart money's on him. But Tass, if I had a vote, I know I said recently that I'd probably vote for Freeman, but I think I'm going to change my vote to Betts. Like, he's just had an insane August. He's come on. It's not just because he's leading in war. I think, like I said, I think it's a bit more complicated than that, but he's had an unbelievable season. And, you know, it gets back to the old thing. Like, if you took Acuna off of the Braves and then if you took Betts off of the Dodgers, where would they be? I think the Dodgers would be in a much worse position. Again, you can't fault Acuna for that. But, I mean, I still think that point needs to be made. But at this point, I would probably vote for Betts because, you know, they've stuck him everywhere. The Dodgers have had a ton of injuries, both to their pitchers and position players and Betts, as well as the other Dodgers that filled in admirably, but especially Betts. And so I think, you know, he deserves credit for that. And I don't think he's going to win the MVP just because of the historical season Acuña's having. But if it were any other season, he'd probably be the favorite right now.
Yeah, and yeah, to go along further down the line, just piggybacking that point, same with Freeman, same with Olson. They're having ridiculously great years, such great years. But yeah, we've got a little a four-man race, but really it's coming down to, at the very max, a three-man race. Olson's unlikely to do it. But yeah, speaking of Freddie Freeman, who's now in the three-hole probably in this race, but is having a great year, I know you kind of wanted to talk about him a little bit because he is sort of overlooked. Maybe because the slugging isn't the same. Like, he's not banging out home runs, but he's just so, so effective in what he does. So just as far as Freddie Freeman goes, is he the best hitter of his generation, do you think, Joel?
I wouldn't say he's the best hitter, but I would say he's number two. Him and Trout basically came into the league almost the exact same year, the same time. I think Trout might have came in a year later. I'm not entirely sure, but Freeman's first full year was 2011. And Tass, since then, he's, you know, from 2011 to current day, he's tied for third in weighted runs created plus. He's behind only Joey Votto and Mike Trout. He's tied for third in WAR behind Trout. He's almost identical to Mookie Betts, which is pretty incredible given Mookie Betts has played a lot fewer games. He's seventh in home runs. He's second in average behind only Buster Posey and Jose Altuve. And he's fifth in OPS. So he's in the top five or just slightly out of the top five in a lot of key offensive metrics. I don't think he's Mike Trout. But that being said, like, Trout is breaking down. Freeman's very durable. I'm not saying Freeman's going to pass some of Trout's numbers. But he's, like, I think when it's all said and done, I think he's going to be, you know, two to Mike Trout when it's all said and done. He's just a completer. He hits for average. He hits for power. He gets a lot of extra base hits. He's got a really good slugging and on-base percentage. I think Freeman is definitely a top three hitter of his generation so far. And when he retires, he could probably even be like a concrete number two. But it really all depends on what Mike Trout does, you know, going forward, how his body holds up in the numbers he puts up.
So I think it was just a slip of the tongue, but I think you're about to say Freddie is a complete player, but you said he's a completer. I think that's
he's a completer?
He's a completer. I think that's a good term for a baseball player that does it all.
Okay.
You just invented a new term. We're ad-libbing here. I thought there was a sting coming into this segment because we're just creatures of habit. I thought a sting was coming.
We are.
But let's break that.
Mean to say complete hitter. Yeah,
complete hitter.
Sorry.
Yeah,
good catch.
And I thought maybe that was technology. Maybe that was just the Zoom cut out half a word. But nah, completer. He's a completer. So he is a complete hitter. Absolutely. It is interesting what the Dodgers are doing. I was, you can kind of say under the radar, although it's the Dodgers, so it's not under the radar, but. Isn't it a tiny bit surprising that they're only four games back of the Braves with all the chatter about the Braves?
Well, it's crazy just because the Dodgers have had so many injuries. They let several key guys go. Like, they let Turner go. They let Bellinger go. There's been a lot of turnover on that roster, and here they are four games out. I just think it's a testament to that front office and the depth and just the constant, you know, churn, or yeah. You know, and that's not the word, but like, yeah. They just have guys always, it's kind of next man up with that team. And you know, the Braves have been fairly healthy. The Braves are an unreal team, and they're only four games ahead of the Dodgers. I think that's just amazing, and it looks like we're gonna get another chapter in that postseason battle. I think they played each other three times in the last four or five years. So I think that'll be another exciting series. But yeah, the Dodgers just always find ways to get it done. And we did a post on this on No_Bunts a couple of days ago. But
Instagram, yeah.
Matt Olson was basically the kind of ideal replacement for Freeman. They're very, very similar players. I understand why the Braves did it. The optics didn't look good, but both guys are flourishing. You know, Matt Olson just a couple years younger, but yeah, both guys are great players.
Yeah, it is wild. And they got four more games, as I said, this week, Thursday through Sunday, as we record here. So August 31st through September 3rd this weekend, Dodgers, Braves. That'll be ridiculously exciting. You mentioned about the luck that some of the teams have had, like the Braves have had in terms of being healthy. A great article by Eno Saris on The Athletic about all the MLB teams and, you know, how luck has affected them and how real that word actually is. You can go to theathletic.com/nodunks or theathletic.com/baseballshow. You get The Athletic for $1 a month for the next year. That's a damn good deal. Damn good writers there making stuff happen. The MVP race is great because you can say Mookie Betts, the guy's playing infield basically for the first time in his career to help out the Dodgers with all these injuries, starting 49 games at second, 16 games at shortstop where he's never started a game in his career. And then you've got the Acuna 30-60, never been done to lead that argument there. But they are very similar in terms of overall stats. I like the Acuna first inning narrative, although you can go with the Betts, you know, filling in and being sort of that utility guy, next man up, as you said. Injuries don't matter. They're in the playoffs. Big weekend series for those two teams. All right, moving on. Speaking about the contenders, Joel, I don't know where you want to start, but let's go through some of the holes in each of the contending teams. And you're not going to start with the Braves because there's zero holes in that team. But kick it off. Where do you want to go with any of the contenders as I set up the playoff picture? It's Braves, Dodgers, Brewers, Phillies, Cubs, Giants, and then a couple teams on the outside looking in, Diamondbacks and Reds in the NL, and then Orioles, Rangers, Twins, Rays, Mariners, Astros, and the Jays on the outside looking in the AL. Where do you want to go?
I'm just going to go over four teams here, and I'm going to start actually with an AL West team. We talked about them briefly a minute ago, but I'm going to start with the Texas Rangers. Their bullpen, they just struggle to close games out tasks. They've converted 26 saves, and they've blown 25. And actually, coming into this week, because they got two saves against the Mets earlier this week, they were actually below in converted saves. It was 24 converted saves and 25 blown saves. Their bullpen just still has issues. That gives me pause. October is a bullpen game. It still seems like they really haven't figured it out. They've got a high octane offense, but you know that works, you know, April to September. But in October, you can't really score your, you know, you can't, you know, put up 7, 8, 9 runs per game and expect to win like that. So, you know, Texas bullpen gives me pause. Evaldi's been out since July 19th. He's been a workhorse. He's scheduled to come back and pitch. So it'll be interesting to see what he's like when he comes back because, you know, he's thrown on a lot of innings up to that point. How does his body feel? But the Rangers bullpen definitely is an issue. And then Tass, you know, talking about the Dodgers, just, you know, their injuries, their depth is really going to be tested. Earlier this week, they lost Tony Gonsolin for the rest of the season. Now, I know that they might get Walker Buehler back before the end of the year, and he's a great playoff pitcher, but they've got a lot of young guys that are going to be playing in October, especially pitchers. I don't know. That's pretty dicey come October. I'd rather go with some more proven guys, some veteran guys. So, you know, the Dodgers' depth and just I feel their injuries might kind of catch up to them. Urias and Kershaw have been good at times, haven't been great at others. Kershaw's battled some health issues as well. And we all know about his struggles in October. So, you know, that definitely is something to take into consideration. And the Phillies, who, Tass, I hate to say this, and I've said this before, I'm on record. I think the Phillies are going to give teams problems, and they match up really well, especially against your Braves. I know they beat them last year. Their starting pitching is excellent. Their bullpen's excellent. and they can just score at will too. But what really makes me worried about the Phillies is their defense. It was bad last year. It's almost just as bad as this year, especially their corner outfielders in Castellanos and Schwarber. They've horrible with defensive runs saved, and third baseman Alex Baum, another bad defender. It could be just one error, you know, but I mean, that could be the difference between winning and losing a game or a series. So the Phillies defense definitely gives me pause. And the last team, the Orioles, Tass, I know that they've had this great Cinderella season. Things have been going great, but there's two things. One, Felix Bautista suffered a UCL injury. The team's being kind of coy. Mm-hmm. He's shut down for the time being. We don't know the severity of that injury, but he's obviously a key piece of that excellent Orioles bullpen. And just the other thing, too, with the Orioles, statistically, they're the luckiest team in the league this year. And I have a feeling, you know, that luck balances out at the worst time, and that could be October. So I could see some early exits for one of these teams that we mentioned, but, you know, we got to wait and see. You got to play the games.
Yeah, the AL is kind of wide open because of that. Although the Orioles have the best record, the fact that Felix Bautista is out and the team is being coy, they're waiting. They're hoping that they can start rehabbing him instead of him having a season-ending surgery. And I think that's a sign of how much they truly believe in their bullpen, and that's not a whole lot because they just don't have many guys to fill in. Shintaro Fujinami would probably be that guy to replace him, but his command is not there. Check the walk rate. He's been struggling. And so I don't think they have a lot of guys to pitch in late inning games. They don't trust Fujinami. So bullpens, when it comes to playoff time, so important. So as far as the AL goes, it feels like it's wide open. Yeah, then you get into the AL West with the Rangers, Mariners, and Astros. You know, one of those teams can grab hold, or maybe they beat each other up here over the last month. And a team like the Twins, I know no one really believes in the AL Central, although our man Carlos Correa / Kendall Roy is coming around slowly. it just feels really, really wide open. Maybe it's the Rays that do their Rays thing and have a great October, but it sure as hell isn't going to be the Blue Jays.
Don't say it, Tass. No. Don't say it.
It's too soon. They do it every. It's unbelievable. I mean, we talked about it in April and May, and how it's like they had within those first 2 months like a season's worth of close games where they didn't come through, and then it's continued into June and July, and August, like yesterday. With Vladdy Guerrero at the plate. I mean, they had bases loaded, nobody out in the bottom of the ninth and could only score one, and they lose by one. Oh. They just can't hit with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, and John Schneider, to put it politely, is not a smart manager. I'm sorry, like Alejandro Kirk, you know, like he was on third base. You know, you have to pinch run for him there. Tass, I didn't know we were going to talk about the Blue Jays and start venting. But you know, the Jays. But honestly, man, like I think the ship has sailed. This is who they are. Like I was kind of waiting for them. Okay, like they're going to turn it around. Like the underlying numbers are there. But it's almost September. Like this is who they are. They're just like simply they're just not good as the other teams ahead of them. They're not as good as Seattle. You know, they're not as good as Tampa or Baltimore. I mean, they're better than Minnesota, but, you know, they're whatever. I mean, Minnesota's leading their division. They're probably going to miss the playoffs. It's going to be a waste of a season. And it's frustrating because this is the year they finally have the starting pitching and the bullpen. Like every year they've always been an offensive juggernaut, but the pitching's failed them. And then this year they have great pitching. And then the offense, you know, craps the bed. It's just so frustrating being a Jays fan. 2021 was heartbreaking, missing the playoffs by one game, and then Seattle coming with that massive comeback. It's just been it's been a tough time to be a Jays fan, Tass.
It is ridiculous, the pitching. How Yusei Kikuchi's had a bounce back year in a serious way. Jose Barrios, same thing. Kevin Gausman just struck out his 200th hitter this season. He's been amazing. And Bassett has been everything that they've hoped. And then yeah, the hitting just falling apart, and now they're banged up again with Bo Bichette back on the IL, Chapman on the IL, so the left side of their infield. They're hoping, you know, David Schneider can chip in and Ernie Clement. But their schedule is just going to get harder, Joel. It's not looking good. Yeah, and as far as I think we've covered the AL there plenty. I made a ton of notes here on the NL, as you said. You didn't think we were going to talk about the Blue Jays? Of course we are. You don't think we're going to talk about the Braves? Of course we are. We're going to keep talking about them. It just happens on this show. But the Braves, it looked like, you know, if anyone wanted to poke holes in them post All-Star break, that their pitching was struggling a little bit and their hitting, kind of like the Dodgers, was saving the day over and over and over again. But now the pitching has got right. Mm-hmm. They look great. Like Charlie Morton, old reliable Charlie Morton, and Spencer Strider, they just both had 18-inning scoreless streaks at the same time. And Max Fried has come back looking good. Bryce Elder has kind of righted the ship. And Kyle Wright should be back in a couple weeks. So rotation of Spencer Strider, Morton, Fried, and either Wright or Elder at the four spot. The rotation's looking good for a series against the Dodgers, but the Dodgers' offense is so good. They're second in a bunch of categories offensively behind the Braves. So, yeah, we're looking at this series coming this week, that which could help determine home field. But in a series between those two teams, the Dodgers might be a tiny underdog, but really it's going to be a close one. And just, you know, flying down, as you said, the Philadelphia Phillies, your man Trey Turner has been hot since the Phillies got behind him. Really, the Philly fans got behind him and turned around his season looking at that. It's been so cool because you don't have that reputation for Philly fans. Philly fans do not have that reputation. But they got behind him. Since then, he has a 19-game home hitting streak. He has been on fire. And with him in the two-hole, their lineup looks a lot better. But they hit a lot of dingers. It makes their lineup more dangerous, with Harper and Brandon Marsh and Real Muto. But, you know, there's still some holes there. And so, I think the Braves should feel better than what they did last year. I mean, they felt good going into the NLDS last year, but they've got holes. Like you said, Kyle Schwarber, this is an interesting stat. Kyle Schwarber has 37 ding-dongs this season, but he has a negative WAR, mainly because he's batting 188. there have been players with 30 home runs in a season that have had a negative WAR, like 13 of them.
I know one.
Who's that?
Dante Bichette.
Oh yeah, I'm not going through all of them, but not giving you. It felt like I was setting up for a trivia. I'm not though.
Oh, okay, sorry.
That's okay. Don't worry about it. But Schwarber could be the first player to hit 40 home runs and have a negative WAR in MLB history. So he's on track for that at 37 homers. Such a strange leading. He bats leadoff. He struggles a little bit defensively. We have 188 average, but he's hit 37 home runs and has a negative WAR. That's an interesting one. Shout out to our guy Cole Ram for that stat. But moving down the line here in the NL, we got to talk about the Brewers. Speaking of fans, our man Garrison always says, why don't you talk about the Brewers? Talk about the Brewers. And I think they could be our fill-in for the Cincinnati Reds, Joel, because the Reds are on the outside looking in. They've dropped a little bit. In that NL Central, our man Joey Votto has fallen off in the month of August. And the Brewers kind of have some young players that, you know, sort of emulate what the Reds are doing. And that's why we were all excited that the Reds were leading the NL Central. But they got some guys like Blake Perkins, Andrew Montestario, Sal Frelick. They're going to have to be our Reds replacement because, you know, you got to cheer for Christian Yelich, who's having a bounce back season. It's not quite MVP Yelich, but, you know, doing his thing. William Contreras, Rowdy Tellez, speaking of the Blue Jays, he's not having a great year, but whatever, you can cheer for him. They've got the pitching. It's not going to be the bats that gets them over the top, but Burns, Peralta, Miley, great top three when it comes to the playoffs. So that's going to be a tough rotation. So yeah, we've got, as far as seedings go, again, Braves, Dodgers, Brewers, Phillies, the Cubs, people want to get behind because there's Bellinger fans, there's Swanson fans, Justin Steele, continues to do his thing. Did it again yesterday. And then Yan Gomes behind the plate. It's an interesting team. And then the Giants are the last wild card team. I don't know if you believe in that team, Joel. I find it hard to believe. Just watched two series with them against the Braves, but they can't hit with runners in scoring position. I don't know how they're still in this thing. Then again, yeah. it is the Braves and it is the Phillies that they just played, so they've had some tough series.
Yeah, I mean, I still think they're a legit candidate for that final wild card spot. I mean, I think they're better than Cincinnati. So I mean, I just think kind of like by default.
The D-backs, but, the D-backs are in between the two teams, like the Diamondbacks.
I still think San Francisco is better than both of those teams. But yeah, and just Tass, you know, that point you were talking about Schwarber just a minute ago. I mean, Philadelphia kind of has to shuffle they've had to be very creative with their defensive lineups this year with the injuries to Harper and Rhys Hoskins. So like, ideally, you don't like. Schwarber should 100% just be DHing at this point in his career. But, you know, Rob Thompson's got to be creative in getting those bats in the lineup. But, you know, bad defense didn't stop them last year. They got all the way to the World Series. So, you know, we'll see.
Rob Thomas is always creative. I mean, Rob Thompson, he is always creative. I just wanted to make a rock. I thought I had a song for Rob Thomas that I could insert there, but I didn't. So I just said Rob Thomas is always creative. Rob Thompson from the only Canadian manager currently in Major League Baseball. Is that correct? I'm pretty sure.
I believe so. Yeah, I think he's from Sebringville, just outside of Stratford, Ontario, Tass.
Don't act like you don't know. You know he's from Sebringville, whatever that is.
That's right.
You used to drive a Sebringville, didn't you?
I got to check the registration on it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, moving on. Top five storylines coming down the stretch. Unless, JD, did you want to talk about the Giants? Because I know you watched the Giants in person. How are they looking out there?
They're looking great. They beat the Braves the day that I was there.
Yeah, that Sunday game.
Yeah, very exciting. Yeah. That's it. That's all I got. It was fun. I was a little hungover the next day, and that's the end of the story.
The Braves. The Braves they're gearing up for a playoff run. You know, they'll throw Colin McHugh out there for a couple innings just to keep the keep the arms fresh. They know what they're doing. Anyways, I'm not sure the Angels know what they're doing. Let's get to the Angels and Shohei Ohtani. We've waited long enough. Let's talk about Shohei, who is going to need Tommy John surgery, ? In that pitching elbow. I say ? Because who knows with Shohei? Maybe he's going to try and rehab it. He isn't talking. He doesn't talk until he wants to. He usually only talks when he starts, Joel, when he gets on the mound on his days when he actually starts. And that isn't happening for the rest of the season. So there's so many questions. When will he talk? If he talks. When will he decide on surgery? Because if he decided right now, he could probably be back up and running, you know, fully and rehabbing that shoulder or the arm to pitch again at the beginning of next season, but who knows? And obviously the big question everybody wants to talk about, will and how will the surgery affect how much he's paid this offseason in free agency? So the Angels, obviously out of it. They just released a bunch of players, which we'll get to as well. But let's start with Shohei. Where do you want to go with Shohei Ohtani?
Well, let's start with, I'll start with the money. I mean, obviously, this is going to cost him a couple shillings. It's going to cost him a couple ducats on his contract. But I don't think it's going to be as much as people think it is. You know, we talked earlier in the year. I think $600 million is the number that we talked about. And I think at that point, it was realistic. I don't think he's going to get that anymore. But I'm still going to stick with probably around $550 million tasks for a couple reasons. What would five full seasons of a dominant two-way player be worth? In my opinion, I'd probably say between $70 and $80 million per year. So, you know, if you're costing that out over 5 years, that's between $350 and $400 million just in those 5 years. So, you know, what does he get beyond those 5 years in his mid to late 30s? I don't know. We don't know how he's going to age. We don't know how his body's going to hold up. Is he going to transition to a relief pitcher later? Is he going to be a starting pitcher his whole career? Like, how long is he going to do this? I still think he's going to get $550 million. And again, he's going to generate double that. He's going to generate more than double that with, you know, TV revenue and merchandise and all those other things. So, you know, $550 million is a lot, but like, what can he generate? So I still think he's going to get that.
Right.
I still think he ends up on the Dodgers. And Tass, just I think you'd said he'll be ready to go by the start of next season. If he's having Tommy John surgery, he's most likely not going to pitch next year at all. Or if he does, it would be like at the very end of the season, similar to what Walker Buehler might be doing later. So he'll probably hit next year, absolutely, like he's doing now. But in terms of pitching, I don't know if he's going to pitch in 2024. But if he does, it'll be later in the season. But I don't think it's going to cost him as much money as people think it does. I saw a lot of knee-jerk reactions. Oh, this is going to cost him hundreds of millions of dollars. No, I don't think so. I mean, he's still young. He's still his, you know, that arm's going to be rebuilt. The guy can mash, and he's still a top-tier pitcher. So if you were kind of just paying him as a hitter or just paying him as a pitcher and you put those two things together, I still think you get to that number.
This is fascinating. Because it's obviously the man is fascinating in and of himself, being such a unicorn in the sport. But now with one of those things taken away, everybody wants to talk about what he can't do because he can't pitch. But I think it is important to focus on what he can do. And yeah, sure, talk about the inability, but the ability is he still will be able to be one of the best hitters in the game. There's no doubt about that. And when I was talking about him having surgery and coming back next year, I just mean he can have Tommy John, and then if he were to have it right now, he'd still be able to come back and hit at the beginning of next year instead of waiting, because here he is hitting right now. He's still DHing. But if he's going to go under the knife, he could get back hitting next year as quick as possible if he were to undergo it right now. So it's just an interesting decision that he's making to wait, because he could, you know, he'll still get a ridiculous contract because he's going to be one of the best hitters for the next decade. He's 29 years old. Look at what Judge just signed for at the beginning of this year as a 31-year-old. So he's going to get more than that. And yeah, he may not be, he's not going to be able to pitch in 2024. That's totally true. But he is relentless. And I guess it was inevitable that he was going to get hurt at some point, because, you know, throwing 100 miles per hour and doing what he's doing, it's just every guy just breaks down at some point. So maybe we're seeing, and it's clear that he's not going to have the 30s, like from, you know, 30 to 39 of him pitching at a high level, but he can still have several years pitching at a high level. And I think that's the structure of the contract is going to be interesting. So we know he's going to be a great hitter. Pay him for that. Okay. It's $40 million a year, most likely, something like that. And then you can pay him an incentive laden contract on the other side, on the pitching side, and say, if you get to 600 innings, you know, in the next 5 years or whatever it is, you get X amount of money. So you threw out the $600 million when we were talking earlier this season. And I think with incentives, that number could be still doable. especially if you just put it out there so there is some safety with a team like the Dodgers. Say we're paying you $350 million for a hitter, as a hitter, $400 million as a hitter, and then you can earn another couple hundred as a pitcher, essentially. I think that that part is fascinating, to see how much he can make. But it is interesting, as a guy who's extremely quiet and extremely sort of secretive, that part is also just kind of fascinating right now, because he ain't talking. He hasn't talked since his injury. He goes out there and he's still ripping balls out there as a hitter. But what his future looks like, nobody knows. And I listened to his former manager, Joe Maddon, on the Starkville podcast this week, and he was adamant that he could, he's going to be back as a pitcher. Because he is so meticulous and he's going to do the right things. And it was interesting hearing Joe Maddon say, like, his pitching helps his hitting, just because he's like, his baseball brain is too big. Like, he needs to do more than just hit. So I wonder if he can't pitch, like, if that comes down the line, how much that affects his hitting. I think that's a decent question. He's still going to get a monster deal, because he can still go out there and he could still just be one of the best hitters. Like, can he just wake up in 2024 and say, I'm going to hit 50 home runs? Probably. Will the non-pitching affect him? That's interesting. Will he play the outfield at some point when his shoulder is back, just moving to that position? That's a possibility as well, if he's not pitching. So many factors here, Joel.
I don't, Taz, that might be a bridge too far for me. I don't think they would risk putting him in the outfield. I think that would just be too much of an injury risk for him. But just in terms of him hitting, I mean, yeah, next year, I mean, you could just pay him $35 to $40 million just to straight up be a DH, and he'd be worth every penny. So, I still think, like, yeah, I'm sticking with $550 million.
$550 million. Do you think there's going to be incentives built into that, or is it just straight up, hey, we're guaranteeing you this money?
I think it's guaranteed money.
Guaranteed money.
I don't. He's like, he's that Ohtani's marketable. I don't think Ohtani's a guy, like, he's not an incentive laden guy. Like, his star is too big. Like, his body of work is just too solid for that. I mean, there might be like a few small incentives, but. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be guaranteed money. And, you know, if the Dodgers, I act like he's going there. But, I mean, I think he's going to the Dodgers. But I would probably front load that as much as possible. Who knows what his body's going to be like in his late 30s. You know, what's the skill level going to be like?
Yeah, and the interesting thing to me is deciding not to undergo surgery now, as the Angels just released six players. They're basically cutting bait. They're saying, we're done. They're trying to save money. But I saw this note from Jeff Passan on ESPN that releasing these guys, if they're picked up, they could get below the competitive balance tax threshold of $233 million. And that means they'll receive a second round pick as compensation for when Ohtani leaves, rather than a fourth round pick when, if. Do you think, actually, speaking of if, do you think the injury helps the chances for the Angels to retain Ohtani?
No, I think he's gone. I think he's gone because he wants to win. Like, he's going to get the bag and he's going to get a chance to win. I mean, basically, from my understanding, the reason he went to the Angels is because they were the only team that would actually let him both pitch and hit. A lot of teams had reservations about having him do both. The Angels were like, sure, like, you can do both. But I think at this point in his career, he wants to win. He wants to build a legacy. You're starting to see that he's a very competitive guy. We saw him in the World Baseball Classic, that emotion, that competitive spirit come out of him. You just really haven't seen that in Anaheim because they've just been bad his whole time there. So I don't think the injury has any effect on Anaheim at all. I personally think the Angels are just one of the most poorly run franchises in all of baseball. Very frustrating. They've wasted the primes of Trout and Ohtani. And, you know, like them releasing these five or six players that they, a few of them they just traded for a couple weeks ago. I mean, that's such a bad look. And, you know, you said, oh, this gets them under the competitive balance tax and they might get a second round pick. I mean, that I'm sorry, but that means absolutely nothing. And knowing the Angels, they'll just waste that pick. They've got the worst ranked farm or one of the worst ranked farms. So, you know, if I'm an Angels fan, I mean, that means nothing to me at all. Just a bad look. And I think he's gone.
Okay. That's a fair point. It's totally a fair point. One thing that the Angels do have going for them, as you said, some teams were reluctant to just allow him to do both. The Angels let him do what he wants. Let him talk when he wants. Mm-hmm. Let him control the clubhouse. Let him control his situation. I wonder if the Dodgers do the same, if it's the Dodgers or another team. Like, he will demand that in negotiations. He will try and lay out the whole blueprint, everything about, you know, whether it's getting the rest or whatever. You know, his whole clubhouse situation, everything. So that mm-hmm. part is interesting to me. And again, we're here at the end of August. He still hasn't undergone surgery. When is that going to happen? Because that just cuts into the first year of whoever signs him. So, yeah, I find it all. It's all this entangled, beautiful mess that's really, really, really interesting. All right, let's look at the last storyline here, looking forward before we move on to some fun stuff. But it is kind of a look back here, Joel, because it's obviously been a very successful year for baseball. Rule changes, all that, attendance staying up consistently throughout the entire year. So looking back and looking forward, how important has this season been to Major League Baseball?
It's been extremely important. It started in March. They had a great World Baseball Classic. It was a great showcase for this amazing sport. You know, they really had a lot of momentum. They capitalized on that. The rule changes, I think, you know, a lot of people were concerned in the beginning. You know, those fears, you know, went away very quickly when they saw how exciting and fast, you know, the new product was. Like you said, attendance is up, viewership is up. But Tass, there's an interesting point I came across here earlier, and that is young fans are up. So the median age of ticket buyers now is 43 years old, but that's down from 46 in 2022 and 49 in 2019. So clearly younger people are gravitating towards the sport of baseball. I think that's a good thing. You've got to take these casual fans, you know, young casual fans, and convert them into, you know, like hardcore fans or, you know, like real fans, you know, like such as myself. You know, that's how you build and expand your fan base. I think they've done that. I think individually teams have done great with promotions, you know, very clever on Twitter. They're clearly marketing towards a younger demographic, and you're seeing that. And, you know, I'm excited to see what the future of this sport's going to be. They still have a long ways to go in terms of catching up to basketball and football in terms of like the national sports conversation and popularity, but you know, they're getting there. They used to be there years ago. I think they can get back. And I think this is kind of a watershed year for baseball. And I hope that they're able to continue this momentum, because it's an exciting, it's a great product. If you haven't seen it, you got to go out there and watch it. It's not the same baseball that you've been watching for the past 5 or 10 years. It's almost like a totally different sport in some respects.
Absolutely. The reason why we talk every week is because you make me feel better. You said the average purchaser of tickets is 43 years old. It's getting younger. And 43 and young don't often go in the same sentence. And, you know, I'm nearing that age. So, You made me feel a little bit better, Joel. And I definitely bought tickets this year, and I walked into a stadium, and it is a different experience. So, yeah, the fact that attendance has stayed up, as we talked about, or stayed consistently higher than last year, you know, throughout the months of April, May, June, July, and August. Yeah, the marketing has gotten better. So, yeah, it has been a fantastic year overall. Great stuff, Joel. That's it for our five biggest storyline or stretch storylines, storyline stretch run storylines. Let's go with that for the final month of the season.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
But now a little baseball story time. I know we got a sting for that, JD. Let's go. Here's a weird story. Every time Yankees reliever Tommy Canley gives up a run, he shaves his entire body. That's real.
That is real.
It's. So I mean, that's.
So we're talking like head, face, everything.
Huh? Nah, I think it's neck down.
Neck down. Okay. Fair. That's a lot. I mean,
Yankees players can't have any facial hair.
Uh huh.
Okay.
That's just a club rule. Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. Neck. Right. Neck down.
Ears down. Okay. I just can't decide if this is a punishment. Like, is he punishing himself? It doesn't feel like much of a punishment. Like, a punishment would be waxing himself every time.
Right.
I don't know if his hair would be able to grow back fast enough in between giving up runs, though. So, I mean, we're going to have a question off of this as far as our sort of self-inflicted punishments go. But is this a punishment, Joel? Like, is it enough of a, I don't know, like, that's the whole thing, right? He is trying to punish himself for doing something
right.
Wrong.
One man's punishment is another man's just straight up grooming, right?
Like, to me, it's a punishment. I mean, I'm a hairy guy, man. I mean, if I had to shave down my entire body, I'd have to book off an afternoon for that. Yeah. TMI.
That's fair.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't want to shave my entire body. I think that's very unorthodox. And when it grows back in, it would be all super itchy and uncomfortable. And you're playing a professional sport. Like, yes, to me, like, that's definitely a punishment.
Okay, you bring up some good points. I would say two things. First, he's having somebody do it for him. So I'm guessing he's not doing it himself. I'm guessing. I don't know. I mean, yeah, maybe I'm wrong. So there's that part. But also, yeah, if you're shaving it, and maybe it's purposeful where, like you said, Joel, it's a little bit itchy, so he's on the mound, and it's a trigger. He remembers it, like, as his as he gets a little chafing, he remembers, oh, damn, I gave up that run. Get better. That's an interesting point.
Yeah, but if he's having somebody do it for him, that's hardly... I agree with Joel. Like, the act of shaving your body would take an afternoon. It would be a pain in the ass. Yeah.
Okay, you guys are exaggerating. It wouldn't take that long.
Okay, well, it would take an hour.
It
would be an ordeal. Like, you would have to put... It would be like... It would be like American Psycho in my bathroom. I'd be laying plastic from the ceiling to the floor, under the floor, everything. Just make sure it catches everything. And then you got to clip it. And then you're, like, shaving your body. It's weird. It would feel sort of... I don't know. You have to go in weird, sort of emasculating... Uh-huh. You know, positions to get all of it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that part.
But once it's done.
I didn't think of that part, yeah.
Once it's done, though, like, he's a professional athlete. I assume he's sort of, you know, he's got some muscles. He's probably shredded. It probably looks great. Probably feels great. Probably feels the cleanest he's ever felt.
Yeah.
It sounds like a reward, actually. Especially if somebody's doing it for him.
Yeah, if somebody's doing it for him. Yeah, doing it yourself, the one part of you, all the crevices, that's the biggest pain.
Mm-hmm.
that's definitely the because for my elective procedure, I actually had to do some shaving, and it wasn't as bad. It wasn't that bad, but if you have somebody do it, if you have a professional do it for you, they know what they're doing. So that's a good question. That's a great question. Tommy Canley needs to be asked about this. Is there any
way? Tass, if the Blue Jays win the World Series, I will shave my entire body.
Wow.
Mark it. Write it down. Write it down.
Doesn't sound like much of a punishment, honestly. A tattoo? A tattoo, maybe? Like, waxing seems worse because there's more pain. JD, I know you do some waxing.
I wax my ears, wax my eyebrows. It's not that. I actually like it. I prefer it to plucking, that's for sure. Because it's just one fell swoop. It feels good, actually. We once waxed Lee Ellis. He loved it. He loved it. It was supposed to be a punishment. We waxed his chest. And we're like, get in there. Get the nipples.
I don't think he loved it while it was happening, though.
He loved it. He loved the attention he was getting.
Okay, yeah. He was on television.
And it was so satisfying
to
watch.
Joel, are you going to be on television when you shave your body?
Ooh, no. No one deserves to see that, Tass. No one deserves to see that.
That's right. If the Blue Jays win the World Series, all of you are getting punished. Because we're going to broadcast Joel shaving his body.
Sorry, JD, I cut you off before we move on. You said it was satisfying seeing Lee.
I was weirdly satisfied watching it, just being like, you know, watching somebody systematically clean something, you know. Like, I watch those kind of, like, my Instagram feed is full of no bunts, no underscore bunts, and just things being cleaned, like ovens being cleaned. It's very satisfying.
Yeah, that's totally true. My man Ken turned me on to a lawn mowing, landscaping YouTube channel. Or the guy just sets up his camera, goes up to somebody's house and says,
I know that guy. I follow that guy.
Yeah, he's great. He says, hey, let me clean your yard. You should probably, give a little care to your yard, and then you can just watch him. You know, it's probably like the baseball zen moments that they have on MLB.
Oh, yeah. Commercials.
Yeah, in between commercials where they do certain things. Like, this is another form of baseball zen. Like, you would see somebody landscape a baseball field. Same thing, JD. Yeah. Systematically clean.
Yeah.
Go Clean Co. on Instagram.
Follow that.
She's amazing. Anyway, weird stuff. Okay, just to get a tiny bit weirder before we move on, what's a weird thing you'd do if you gave up a run as a relief pitcher, Joel? Do you have a... an answer for that, or is that shaving the bod like you just said?
No, I would wear jeans for 3 days in a row, and you're like, what, Joel, that's no punishment. No, listen, I physically hate jeans. I have worn jeans once since 2013, and that was for a staff party here in Taiwan. I hate
you got
denim.
All dressed up for the party, eh?
Yeah, I brought one pair of jeans with me, and I don't own a pair of jeans anymore. I hate denim. I've hated denim my entire life. The only reason I wore it is because I didn't want to get made fun of in junior high school. In high school, it's uncomfortable. It's heavy. I don't think it looks good. I'm very anti-jeans, so if I gave up a run, I would wear jeans for 3 days straight. And just to keep it super, to keep it a bad punishment, I'd wear skinny jeans because I hate skinny jeans, and I'm do not have the body at all. It would be looking like you're just stuffing a sausage inside of a casing. Like, that's me in skinny jeans. So I would wear skinny jeans for 3 days, but I'd be throwing nothing but bullets and zeros because I hate denim with the passion of a thousand suns.
Joel, denim technology has come a long way in the last 10 years.
That's a good point. Yeah. It's not even denim anymore.
It's like, stretchy material, breathable. This is not a punishment.
Listen, I'm going to be 42 in a couple of weeks, hashtag Virgo season. And, I'm built for comfort. I'm not built for speed anymore. Sweatpants, living in a tropical country, shorts. That is me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you will never find me wearing jeans ever again in my life. I'm off jeans forever.
Wow.
Amazing. You bring up a good sort of a good point about people who had to work from home, you know, the WFH happening. The summer months here, you in a warm country here, us in a warm environment, had to wear shorts basically the last few months. And you kind of get used to it. And it's a little difficult to go back. I don't know if you found that, JD. Yeah. I mean, when sticking on pants.
Yeah.
Putting them on.
Yeah, this time of year. But November, December.
Yeah. I'm not going to wear shorts in November and December. Nah. But
just a nice pair of H&M sweatpants with a hoodie.
H&M sweatpants.
Hey, wear Viore over here.
I died and went to heaven.
I am wearing Viore pants. Yeah, if you're part of the Athletic Network, you got to be wearing Viore pants. H&M, this fast fashion, it's not good for the planet.
No.
Oh,
I know, but they're the only place in Taiwan that have my size because. I'm a triple XL in Taiwan.
Really?
So they're an H&M is the only basically international clothing store that carries that size.
What? That's crazy.
Yeah. I could lose a few pounds. Yeah. I could lose a few pounds.
Yeah, but you're just a normal man.
Don't sugarcoat it. I'm fat. You don't need to look confused. I'm not... 32% body fat. Let's just keep it real.
Okay. Well, all right. 32. Okay.
Yeah, but he's saying compared to the average Taiwanese, and when you go to the store, you got to go the triple XL, right? That's what you're saying, Joel.
Yeah, they're the only I've gone to just Taiwanese clothes, and I mean I don't even come close. It's like Chris Farley, fat guy in a little coat. You know, I'm like. No, this isn't happening.
They're like,
this is not happening.
Why would we make clothes this big? And then Joel walks
exactly.
In.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like the Shaq of Taiwan.
I know, but
minus the talent.
32%. I know we've got an obesity problem in the US. 40% of people are verging on the obesity. I mean, that's a stat that's not entirely accurate, but it's some, it's around the 40% mark. And Joel, at the 32% on that BMI scale, that's not crazy. I would think.
It's not good.
I'm not saying it's good. We're going to lose some weight here, Joel, or what?
We are. Yeah, we're going to lose some weight.
Got to get into
it. I shaved my beard earlier. I already lost 2 pounds.
All right, moving on. Our final topic, unless you want to talk more about losing weight. I mean, we should just make an entire show about that. Maybe it's an off-season show. Like our man Charles Barkley, you just touched your face as you talked about shaving your beard. Charles Barkley recently saw the pounds have dripped off him in the face neck area. He's lost 50 pounds or something. Wow. I think Charles does this from time to time. He told us on the Starter/No Dunks, he was going to a fat farm, as he called it, mm-hmm. 1 year. And he does this from time to time. He looks so different right now because he's dropped so much weight. I only see him neck up when he's doing interviews. So you could be a Charles. Forget about the Shaq. You got to be a Charles Barkley, Joel, and lose that weight. But anyways, maybe we'll have an off-season regimen. Okay, last topic here. It's a little fair or foul because there was a fan in San Francisco that caught a foul ball with a fishing net. She reached up and was able to snag a ball using this fishing net. What do you say, Joel? Fair or foul?
No, oh, big time foul.
Yeah.
Big foul with a capital F. a glove is fine, but a fishing net, come on. I mean, that's a bit too much for me. You got to make it somewhat challenging. And I hope she gave that ball to a kid.
It doesn't look like it.
No.
By the video that we just showed you, if you're joining us on YouTube on the Athletic Baseball Show, she was so excited. It doesn't look like she was giving that up whatsoever. I debate. There she is, hands up, both arms up, in the enthralled position, super excited. Yeah, I debated. Is this innovation, or is this cheating? And I even looked at the pole. Is it a retractable, an extended pole? It wasn't. It's not one of those telescopic sticks that you use for a selfie stick or a fishing pole.
No.
It looks like just a short
standard
one.
Standard issue.
Yeah.
Regular.
It's a really short pole.
Yeah. And I mean, I wouldn't say really short. It's a foot and a half.
Yeah. I'd say a foot and a half. So, I mean, that makes it less offensive to me, where it's not like, it's not like she reached across four rows. You know what I mean? Like she didn't stick that in her pants, get through security, and then and then, you know, fully extend that thing. It's a kind of a short pull.
Yeah, but she reached across something. I mean,
we don't know. Yeah. We didn't see it live.
Yeah, it didn't get caught on camera.
For all we know, she could have just picked it up off the ground, JD.
Yeah, but that could What do you mean?
We don't know how she retrieved the ball. That's all I'm saying. Oh,
and then she put it in the net? There's no way. There's no way. She wouldn't have been that happy.
Probably not. Probably not. It's unlikely.
Yeah, this is foul for me.
Yeah, it's foul.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely foul. Pardon the pun, but it's absolutely foul.
I mean, you would frown. I frown on adults bringing gloves to the ballpark.
Ooh, that's another contentious issue too. Yeah, I've heard that theory before. I'm indifferent. I mean, I personally wouldn't bring one as an adult, but you know, if I saw an adult with one, I'd be like, okay, fair play, but I wouldn't personally bring one. Okay. Take that, just take it. Yeah, just take it barehanded.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying, JD. Gotta barehand it.
Gotta barehand it. Oh, over the age of 16, you gotta barehand it.
Okay. I'm okay with people bringing in gloves. I'm fine with that. If you don't want to break a finger, you know, if you're... A glove is all right.
Yeah.
A glove is fine. But this is too much. I agree. This is too far. It's wrong. And how did she get it in as well?
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah, it's weird.
It is weird. Didn't go off in the metal detector, I guess. Maybe there is no metal detectors. I don't know.
Well, what about a happy medium? You know, JD, you brought up an interesting point. Like after 16, I feel like depending on what age you are, you should be able to bring a random item to catch something. So like 16 and below, it's a glove. 16 to 32, it could be like a fishbowl or like a large glass, you know, and then like depending on the age, you can change the item. I could be okay with that. I can get on board with that.
Yeah.
But no fishing nets.
No fishing nets.
Maybe for seniors. Senior fans, senior fans, 65 and above, seniors can have fishing nets.
But as we've learned, seniors don't.
I'm not made of stone.
As we've learned, fans are getting younger. Seniors don't go watch baseball games anymore. It's just kids and 40-year-olds. All right, Joel, I think that wraps it up. Fantastic show. We'll be back next week where we will inevitably talk about the Dodgers and the Braves, I'm sure, a little bit. But, yeah, as we get here into September, we'll be talking about the playoff races. Get back with us every Wednesday on the Athletic Baseball Show feed, wherever you get your pods, or in the Athletic Baseball Show YouTube channel. Again, you can get the best writing in sports for only $1 a month for the next year, $12, at either theathletic.com/baseballshow or theathletic.com/nodunks, depending on what kind of URL you're into. Jump on over to our Instagram page, no_bunts. Joel, you're about to put up a post about the Shohei Ohtani /Angels releasing everybody that they got at the trade deadline. Looking forward to that. For Joel, for JD, I'm Tass. We'll see you next Wednesday.